welcome to the Doctor Who podcast from Casterbus. My name is Christian Corley, and with me is James McLean. We are here to do that really annoying thing that your housemates do, watch Doctor Who and talk over it at the same time. We are looking at the Android Invasion this week. James, are you ready to go?
Yeah, I'm ready.
So if you've all got your DVDs or BritBoxes or whatever system of streaming you are watching the Android Invasion along with us on, we will commence in 3, 2, 1, play.
This is the sad thing for me, is that I don't watch many DVDs anymore because, you know, just streaming everything. So I have a very tiny little black flip-up DVD player running.
All right.
Which is very cute, but it's very noisy, which you can probably hear in the background as it's spinning and whirling like it's from 2001. It's bizarre.
It's a proper old-school podcast, this, isn't it?
It is, yeah, absolutely.
Blister remote controls and spinning DVDs in the background.
Oh no. Well, this is because of something we said before we started recording. Not blister remote control. It's a kind of like blister buttons on the actual deck. It's not actually... No remote control with this.
Oh, there's no remote control. You're actually leaning across and pressing buttons.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. What would your kids think of hearing that?
They'd probably think you'd borrowed it from my dad or something.
Yeah. Oh, here's the police box. This is the only reason I wanted to watch this one, is I just love the colour of it.
Is that ginger beer he's drinking?
It's just a fascinating overcoat or whatever they put on it as well. A weird sheen. I know I'm talking like Terranova, but it just fascinates me.
It is nice, and it is always nice to see those old episodes shot on reasonably decent quality film as well, rather than the later episodes where they were going out on in the classic series, going out and doing a video on location. Although, then again, Siege of Doom, that uses video on location, doesn't it, rather than film stock. But the thing that's probably the most interesting about this is that it's by Terry Nation, and it's after 1970, and it's not about Daleks.
I'm sure it would have been if they'd allowed him to. I'm sure his first treatment would have had Daleks in it.
Yes.
And a city. They'd be on their way to find a city at the moment. There's some fouls and radiation and all those lovely things he loved to do until they told him to stop it. Yeah, no, I never really watched this story. I don't particularly like it, but it is quite a gentle story in its own way. I think that's why people like it. There's a thing where Doctor Who fans like Doctor episodes because there's an English village in it.
Yes.
And there seems to be something about that, which is sort of almost like a subgenre of Doctor Who, the English village story, which there aren't many of, actually. This, The Demons, The Awakening, spring to mind. I'm talking old school, classic ones.
Do you want to know something?
What's that?
I was actually in the vicinity of East Hagbourne in Oxfordshire, which is a few miles from Didcot, on Friday and yesterday, because I've been to Legoland. So I was quite close to where this was filmed. Now, that's just a coincidence that doesn't normally happen, because I don't normally venture south of Yorkshire.
I mean, it's a coincidence. I mean, you're kind of sort of saying I was not sad enough to be down there deliberately looking for this place, but you did actually know where this place was, which is...
Well, I roughly know where roughly all of them are, roughly speaking, and I just checked it on Wikipedia to specify exactly where it is. Oh, she's on one. Oh, no. She's gone rolling down a hill far more convincingly than she did in The Five Doctors.
Is that, is the Five Doctor shot kind of like a homage to that? Because it's done very similar.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah.
That does not, and it's not as steep as perhaps they want it to be, just like in a Five Doctors.
That slow-mo shot should have been a clue that they weren't on Earth, shouldn't it?
It's a weird era, this. I mean, it sort of holds together because of the two, the dynamic of the two. I mean, there's so many stories in this era which I don't particularly think work very well, but kind of have a charm, and I hate to say this because I hate people who say it, because of these two actors. I mean, Planet of Evil, as we've said before, is kind of duff.
Yes.
But they have some charming moments in it. You know, even the Great Pyramids of Mars, you know, a lot of its strengths come from them.
Yeah, it does. I suppose you're right, yeah.
I mean, I do like Pyramids of Mars. I'm not saying it's a bad one, but I'm saying you can't deny some, a lot of its charm comes from these two.
Do you know, I've probably watched Pyramids of Mars more than any other Doctor Who serial.
Yeah, I used to watch it a lot. Same coating on the police box. It kind of draws me to it. It's one of those episodes would be interesting to have seen without knowing what it was, so like the first time round, to see how well the mystery holds up. Or is it really obvious? But you're right, and somewhere I was reading this the other day, and I can't remember where, that was sort of saying how, you know, if you what the bits of old Doctor Who which are done on film really do hold up well. And it's just a shame of the, as you say, the video that kind of lets it down and sort of gives it its wonky.
Yeah. Well, you know, something that's not related to this episode directly and only tangentially related to Doctor Who at all. You know how they repaired the mix of video background and film sort of foreground on Caves of Androzani's later DVD releases?
Yeah.
Because it used to have that shimmer because I think it was something to do with a different frame rate or something. It appeared to be wobbling or something. The Queen video, A Kind of Magic, uses the same technique at the beginning and at probably the end. And you might think, well, Queen have got a lot more money than the BBC. They haven't repaired it. And I was watching it the other day. I was thinking, well, this was and the video was remastered as well about 15 years ago. And it blew my mind that they hadn't fixed that very obvious wobble between the foreground of the theatre and the sort of fantasy background. Considering how much money the BBC have got to do things like that, you would think that that was just something that they could do like that, but they didn't bother. I like the way he puts that.
One of those rare instances here as well where Sarah's mentioned her job.
Yeah.
And actually having a background before being with him. Which you just don't get. I mean, I know it's a very dull thing to do, but I'm trying to think of companions who have mentioned their past as part of their character in passing, and you don't really get it. I mean, you know, you think that, I mean, all you know about Tegan really is that she was going to be an air hostess.
Well, it's because she was dressed as an air hostess for quite a long
time. It's all very on the nose. I mean, do you read Perry ever talk about anything from her?
I think there might be a botany mention in the one with Honor Blackman, the spaceship liner thing, the Terror of the Vervoids.
Oh, Terror of the Vervoids.
Yeah.
But Terror of the Vervoids is with Bonnie Langford.
Yes, it is. So it's not that one, is it? I'm sure there's a mention of botany at
But there
some
might
point.
be. But it's interesting just to think of which
I think
ones
it's
are
only the
actually.
ones.
I mean, Turlough, you obviously can't because his background's a mystery.
But it's got to be somewhere else in the Trial of a Time Lord, because those are the ones that, of the six Doctors era, I've seen the most.
But yeah, just generally speaking, I mean, I think, I mean, Nyssa mentions a couple of times Traken, I guess. But certainly Earth-based characters, I think it's harder for writers to remember. Because if
It
you've got an
shouldn't
alien
be,
like
though,
that,
should it?
oh,
Should
I
it?
know.
I mean, it doesn't happen that much in the current era of Doctor Who, really. I mean, Rose forgot about being a shop girl. Well, the writers. Martha's obviously a doctor. Donna's a temp, which kind of is a good get-out clause, because it can give her any job, basically, if required, can't it?
It's just an odd thing because you think in a stories where you're seeking, in most kind of storylines where you have different. I'm trying to think of examples. But usually, if characters have a specific character skill, the stories will find ways of utilizing that skill to make them relevant. I mean, let's do something really obvious like Star Trek. You will have the, because obviously that's an obvious one because they've actually got specific skills as their jobs. You'll look to find things for those characters to do with those jobs. It's all the Doctor who doesn't do that. His companions have certain skills, but apart from, as you say, medicine, so people like Harry, you never really see them using the characters in their companions are always very much, as everyone has always said, sort of story ciphers.
Do you think maybe it's because most drama is in some ways work based, and when it comes to Doctor Who, it's not really work based, is it? Or have a big dimension of employment, someone's job, their role in society, whatsoever. And that doesn't really happen with Doctor Who, because it's really they just arrive in a scenario, and those traits aren't really, or the background or whatever, aren't really sort of relied on very often.
I know. I just find it very weird. I find it very weird in every other kind of show, really. You introduce a character, as the character goes along, you start to learn more about them and their background. And yet Doctor Who seems to do the opposite. You learn about their background in the first episode, and then it doesn't really apply that much after that. I mean, as you say, unless it has something specific to the story, like if they've come from a medicine background, or maybe they have some particular skill, like Ace later on with the Nitro Nine. And again, obviously Sarah did for a little bit, and then that drops by the wayside until you get little pocket moments like this where she sort of comes back to being a journalist. But Ian and Barbara were, I hate to say it, because we always say this, but are very good examples of where you are kind of doing it right, where you've got people who are, you're constantly reminded, well, maybe they're not done right either, because Ian, oh, it doesn't take long for Ian's science level to disappear. We never really learn about his background beyond that. Barbara, yes, she has her moments of history in the Aztecs, but again, their core thing is getting back to home. But we never really understand what home is. They never really talk about it, and it's kind of weird in the Whittaker book. And there's, I think it's Byzantium. Is it Byzantium? No, it's not Byzantium. Or is it Byzantium? I can't remember. There's one of the BBC books where they, I think it might be Byzantium, where they talk about Ian going and having a drink in the pub after cricket matches and having a few pints. And it's kind of really, it's kind of jarring because you can't actually imagine them outside doing that because it's, that sort of level of them is never mentioned in the show. I mean,
No.
does Ian rent his house? I've always wondered that. Does he seemingly doesn't live with family? Where are his family? Well, I hate to sound Ian obsessive, but You know, same with all of them. And I, apart from the new series, where obviously we get a lot of their family.
Stranger in a pub.
I know, we've got way off base. It's amazing they didn't do more stories like Android Invasion, so far as they are fairly cheap in a lot of ways. In terms of, you know, planning out where you have mystery in a village. You can have lots of ominous shots of weird people and a mystery going on, which doesn't require too much budget.
Who are...
Yeah, I mean, I suppose this is something the Android Invasion is good at, is it does do a lot, it does quite a lot on her being a journalist, doesn't it? Even though it doesn't speak of her background, a lot of the story is her being journalisty. I suppose the thing with Doctor Who is it never sort of grew out of that. It's birth as a confused product that's neither children's nor adults' television. So you get this weird thing where characters are never fully developed as you would if it was an adult thing. And yes, they're far more real than they would be in a children's show.
Nice model shot, I think. I'm not sure if I'm sold on it.
Well, it's a composite, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, but it works. It gives you enough of.
Dawson, noisy.
I mean, it's funny when you watch Doctor Who and you see a shot like that. And you think that doesn't quite work, but you go with it. And there was a video the other day I was watching on watching the recent She-Hulk trailer, and there was some VFX VFX guys sort of saying, you know, it's not as bad as fandom have slammed it for. I don't know if you've seen it.
What trailer is this?
The She-Hulk for the
Oh,
Disney
yeah, I've seen that, yeah.
TV show. Yeah, and people saying how janky some of the effects are in it. And I think it's just very interesting when you watch the effects, really, they're fine. And I suppose from, again, when you watch something like Android Invasion, you have that setup shot of the building. And that too is janky to be kind. You know, you accept it and you just go on with it. And it's just amazing how, you know, the better things get, the less critical, we don't get less critical of them, we just have an accept, you know, an assumption that they are, you know, we they should be better.
No, Sarah.
I mean, there's some interesting choices in this one. As I say, the mystery in part one. I think there's something having the TARDIS vanish as well is quite unusual. Isolate them, set up the stakes in the first part. Do you think this one would have been any better if they'd had the Brigadier in it? Do you
I
think it
don't
would have
think it would have
made any
made an
difference?
awful lot of difference, to be honest. No, because he's not really. I don't know, it might have. It depends, doesn't it? Because it's this sort of transition era, isn't it? Where they're sort of moving away from unit and they. I mean, he. I think he was approached, wasn't he? Or he was on tour or something.
Yeah, I
So
think he was.
he couldn't appear in it. So they've obviously cast. The Colonel Faraday character.
It's a pretty the other thing I think this show frustrates me a bit is the lack of Harry or the lack of dealing with Harry well in this,
Yeah.
which again just shows a show on the run that it's too busy to really be thinking in that sort of long form. The arc of Harry Sullivan. And not realizing that, within a few years he'd become one of the most popular
Yes.
male characters, certainly, that they ever had.
I'm pretty sure that was a
And
direct hit on the doctor's back there, but anyway, maybe we can thank Clara for that. Oh, I'd somehow forgotten about this scene. I like this.
Maybe Time Lords have, like on a video game, hit point HUD. Take a hit to your back, and your green
Yeah,
bar goes down a little bit, but you're all right.
love that line. Yes, I do enjoy that.
I'm assuming the line was a Tom Baker line.
Yes, is that finger loaded?
He's very yes.
Yeah, it's not something that you would immediately imagine to have sprung from the typewriter of Terry Nation, is it? Could be a Terence Dicks line. Oh, no, it'd be
Could
Robert
be.
Holmes at this stage, so
It feels like an
50-50.
early Baker insert.
Yeah.
It's an odd story. I don't know why it doesn't resonate with me more. He's got a lot of things going on. It's got a nice little mystery. We obviously will, in the next few parts, have some change of scene, different location.
That's an interesting shot, isn't it? Because you can't actually really see what it is, and anyone watching, who's a regular viewer, they might look at that and think it's a Sontaran with that sort of angle of the creature's face. What do you think of the because I'm watching this on BritBox, you're watching it on DVD, I'm watching on BritBox. What do you think of the button that says skip intro?
It depends on why I'm watching something.
I
Think
don't
it's more
like
like.
it. I'm not a fan of it at all. I like the intro. It feels like an integral part of any program that I'm watching. And in many ways, whether or not it's actually sort of, if it, something like Modern Family that is specifically about setting the scene with the intro, it's like Tony Hughes in it and everything like that, or if it's just something that sets the mood for the show, like maybe like Doctor Who, I think it's an important part of the viewing experience.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. He's just having to realize he has to click to go on to part two because he hadn't put play all, so I'm going to be a little behind you.
Oops.
That's life. We'll manage.
Manual DVD.
Yeah, I
Is it
don't
a
mind.
foot pad? Do you have to pedal for the DVD to go around?
Answering that.
Yeah,
Well, far too exhausted for that sort of interrogation. Yeah, it's no, I don't. I don't tend to. My family find it frustrating because I agree with you, and I've always been a strong believer of this, that the intro is integral to sort of setting up the, or almost like a fine-tuning the audience expectation almost. You know, I mean, it sort of prepares you. I know family members got very angry, frustrated with me because I've been watching a lot of Taskmaster, and I insist on the intro because, again, I find the montage and the music, I do enjoy the bass line to that music, sets up my experience, and it feels kind of empty if you don't. You just go straight into a show.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think also, you know, Doctor Who, it's not just how it's broadcast, but how it was constructed. And it was constructed, as we know, to be watched in segments. And I think that break kind of helps you sort of reset and accept a new segment.
Yeah.
While if it just flows on, I think it starts to, you start to see between the cracks. The story seems to be repetitive because you're no longer accepting that it was meant to be the next episode was a week later. You start to lose what it's actually meant to be doing.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's some intros I'd love to skip. I'll always skip the Star Trek intros because I find them largely loathsome. Sort of pompous self-gratification in the max. I just can't stand them. But generally speaking, I think, yeah, you should have your intro.
But you'll watch the rest of the episode?
Yeah, I'll happily, you know, I went through a period a while ago watching Next Generation ones, and I got very used to when the, on Netflix, when you skip intro, you get the last sort of three beats of the intro, the da 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 four beats, and that sort of came. I got used to that, but I just can't stand that intro. It's slow. It's meandering. I don't think it fits what the show's about, and so I'll always skip it. But by and large, yes, I agree with you. I mean, I hated it, and I'd say like, it was like the 90s, and it still happens to this day. You know, after the 80s, intros became less unique and characterised. I always think that they're very strong ways of making shows memorable. And for God's sake, Space 1999 is probably remembered more for its intro than it is for its actual content.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Shows like Minder.
Absolutely, yeah,
it's the
yeah.
same. People, you know, these you know, strong intros will not just help you watch the show, but they become very good ways of making them memorable. And, you know, on a long term.
Now that's an interesting detail that I'd completely forgotten about, with Crayford being believed to be dead. Ooh.
I think also another problem the story has is that for audiences who are looking forward to seeing or would enjoy seeing Benton again or Harry, having them largely being facsimiles through this is frustrating.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? I mean, obviously they weren't putting them in here to be a present to the Peter Capaldis of this world, were they? They were, at the time, you know, the young Doctor Who fan, they were just there because it fit, because it was a unit story, I suppose. They weren't. It wasn't a gift to the quote-unquote fans. It was just because it made sense.
It's so weird how you see that turnaround, and now, if you watch, you know, like, as we talk about before, Rise of Skywalker, you feel a film neutered by its fear of its loud, vocal, but relatively small fan base, you know, in terms, but that fan base can have a certain impact in, you know, your aggregation of ratings and all the sorts on the internet. So, but, you know, suddenly, you know, fans are very much in the mind.
Yeah.
And it's weird because on a tangent, I watched last night Ghostbusters Afterlife. And that was an interesting film in the sense that the film, as people know without spoiling it, does the original cast do appear in it. But it doesn't need them. And it'd be far better without it, even though I loved seeing them again.
That's interesting. I haven't seen them
there. But as I say, I'm not spoiling anything. It's been well known that the original cast do make some appearances.
Yeah.
So, but I didn't need them in the end. I was watching this going, I just don't need them. I'd like to see them. And that's why they'll be there, because they know I want to see them. But I don't need them. The story does not need them. They should not be in this. But, you know, it's almost like it's a total antithesis to what they're doing in the 70s. And funnily enough, even in the 80s, where there was a far more of an awareness of that sort of culture, where, you know, you would have returns because they knew that there was a sort of a vibrant base that wasn't all its audience, but certainly an ongoing watching who would be interested in seeing some of these characters return. I just find it very weird in this show how so much of, you know, old Doctor, the problem is, as we've said before, you've got like 90 minutes and there's a lot of running around backwards and forth. And, you know, to some degree, some of that repetition is because you've got limited budgets. You want to reuse sets.
Yeah.
You want to take up time, which you could do with some running shots and some hiding shots and, you know, between the exposition points. But they never ever consider just having the characters sit there and have a dialogue scene where they save money because the two of them are talking, you know. And, you know, it could be something about Sarah saying, you know, how weird it is to be back here, you know, how she misses this as a kid. She did so and so, you know, those sort of scenes that you'd expect in television today to break up action and tension and to create a wave of movement through a show, the ups and downs, the dynamics. And yet Doctor Who never does it in the old show, never does it. And even Blake Seven, which was, you know, they were on record saying, yeah, these scenes are quite long and talky because we knew that we were saving money. But they would never really sit down and talk about the character's history or their past or really their feelings or anything like that. It was just never in there. It was never in the ballpark. And yet that's what fans would love to see. And especially if you think, you know, obviously they couldn't, you think 40 years later and you've got YouTube, you know, the bits that fans will watch will be those monologues, those little moments where there is a bit of character. And you do start seeing in McCoy thinking about it. I'm just thinking, you know, like in Remembrance of the Daleks, where he's in the cafe and he starts talking about one lump
sugar?
Or two, you know, the sugar. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's probably, in my head, one of the first times you actually have one of those scenes, which doesn't need to be in there, but just kind of breaks the flow, allows the story to breathe a bit. It's very cheap and gives you some insight. But you just don't do it in Doctor Who, in the 70s, certainly. And it's at the time where they needed it. I mean, you could say it's either an underestimation of an audience, or maybe the audience just didn't want that sort of thing, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. But you say that, and I've been watching the first few episodes of The Good Life recently, and I was surprised by how much actual character is in that, with that you got the whole background of the job. And then I also caught this bit of a spoiler, but not really because I'd seen it. I also caught a clip of the last episode on YouTube the other day, in error. And it's interesting how it is. It actually makes a full story, and there is like this development of where they start and where they end up being more or less the same place. Yeah, yeah. So it's that's in a sitcom, which is not the place you usually expect character development because, well, that kind of breaks the sitcom if the character learns from the mistakes and all that sort of thing, doesn't it? So.
Yeah.
So we've just seen Ian Marta for the first... Is that for the first time we've seen him, or is it the first...
yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, he's one of the show's biggest mistakes.
Not utilising him better.
Yeah. I mean, he was utilised brilliantly in the first season. But then to drop him... they dropped him obviously too early. It's a funny thing with Doctor Who is that you've never had companions really return, have you?
Not in the past, no.
In a sense of like, you know, they could have had a time with Sarah, and when Sarah went, you could go, well, we could bring Harry back. Or we could bring Harry and someone else, but they never had. That was never on the radar. I mean, obviously, a lot of actors and actresses, well, actors we call as a group, would leave because they wanted to move on and didn't want to come back because they were now doing other things. But it's not a show which did that. Being a long-running show like a soap, in that sense, a long-going serial show. You'd think that would be a possibility. And I suppose you do get the cameos and the reappearances in, you know, anniversary episodes and the like. But up until say, maybe this year, we've never really had that sort of thing where a character comes back in a proper way for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. It is strange, isn't it? The Kralls, while very ugly, and look, they obviously have I think it's a really good design, but they don't seem particularly malevolent, do they? I think they are characterised well as being conducting some sort of test, being more interested in the test rather than the end game.
Yeah.
Which is, I suppose, might be why. Spoiler, they fail.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they just don't work. I mean, as you say, the makeup is very good. The characterization of the way the actors play them is very good. They are not just lumbering monsters, which is very good. And yet they are utterly unmemorable.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that is. I mean, they do feel, as you said earlier, which is very true, they do feel like a variant of the Sontarans. And I wonder if that's why. Are they just too much like things we'd seen before?
Perhaps, yeah.
I think also they don't feel very threatening in their physicality either. I mean, this episode's a very weird episode because it has bits. It feels like you can feel the Sontaran experiment in here. You can feel Terror of the Zygons in this.
Yeah.
You know, obviously have Harry reappear in UNIT. It feels like a callback to many of the elements of the last few years in Doctor Who.
I wonder if that's anything to do with the script editor making amends to the original script.
Do you remember much about the original script? I remember watching the features on this a while ago, but my memory is a bit blank.
I remember reading something in DWM in one of the archive articles, but it's such a long time ago, I can't really state anything with any definitive memory, really.
Yeah. I think it's also fascinating about the pub set. It's very similar to the pub set in Battlefield.
I
Just wonder
haven't
if
seen
that's just a.
Battlefield in a while, so.
And my brain is thinking, bar on the left, windows at the back. I mean, obviously,
Yeah.
there's only a certain way you can do on a
Well,
three-wall
indeed. Yeah.
room. And invariably, you're going to have the bar on one side, left or right. So invariably, you're going to end up being either like Battlefield or the opposite of Battlefield, I guess.
Well, there's the demons option as well, with the bar opposite the door. But you've got the door on the left as you're looking in, and the bar on the
Yeah,
right.
the door's in the wrong place in this one, I think, compared to Battlefield. It's just the over the shoulder shot of the bar just reminds me of one of the ones in Battlefield, I think. But
Yeah.
yeah, the door's in the wrong place. The door's on the opposite side to where we'd be in Battlefield. I'm sure the listener's very glad they tuned into this.
Ah.
Yeah, it is like a greatest hits this episode. It's very weird.
But you know, I was looking at some of the comments of reviewers that have given this in the broadcast and reception section on the Android Invasion page on Wikipedia. Kenneth Williams mentioned it in his diary, watching this episode. On the 29th of
Okay.
November 1975, he writes, "Doctor Who gets more and more silly." So, Paul Cornell, Martin Day, and Keith Topping in the Discontinuity Guide judged it to be stupid, tiresome, and very irritating. In the Television
Stupid
Companion,
what?
stupid, comma, tiresome, and very
Oh,
irritating.
tiresome.
Tiresome, yes. In the Television Companion, David J. Howe and Stephen James Walker reported the serial had a mixed reception and that Kral's were somewhat unoriginal but otherwise reasonable addition to Doctor Who. There's also Ian Berryman of SFX has described it as enjoyable as it is unlikely. John Kenneth Muir described it
Huh.
as an atmosphere-laden suspense thriller.
That's John for you. Yeah.
So it's
He always sees the
interesting.
positives. Yeah, no, yes, it's a little
I don't
polarized.
find
Well,
myself disagreeing with any of these. They all seem to be quite pretty much on the. Oh, that old cheese symbol. I forgot about. I remember that. That old Union flag division of British cheeses that you used to find on the door of delicatessens. Goodness me. That takes me back.
Yeah, a lot to take you back. God, yeah. I think I vaguely remember that. But I mean, I think, when I think of taking me back, I think for me, it's like even shops like therein would have some excitement in the sense that there may be an episode of a copy of 2000 AD in the rack, or there might be a really old, not really old, and a Marvel comic which has been imported over, sitting with dust. Even sort of old shops like this would have some treasures because consumption was so different.
Yeah. Well, my gran had a shop around this time until the mid-80s, and it was a sweet shop. And I mean, I occasionally dream of it. You'd go into it, and there'd be like a glass cabinet in front of you with all the sort of like penny sweets that would get weighed or what have you. And they sold tobacco as well. And there was always a smell of cigars as you went in the shop, although that might have been my granddad, not sure. You'd have all these strange boxes. My mum and dad had like a Lion Bar box from the late 60s, early 70s, and my dad used to keep his cine films in. And, you know, that lasted into the early 2000s. So you'd look at that and you'd instantly think of my grand's shop. She had a little ice cream cabinet with wafers and those bits of those blocks of narrow blocks of vanilla ice cream that you'd eat between the wafers, all sorts. Oh, yeah, takes me back.
Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons I always quite like the earth-based ones. Because I tend to find I will, and we all do this, we'll piggyback shows not for their content, but sometimes for the culture that they are reminding you of.
Yeah.
I've been watching Amazon Prime at the moment. It's got the old Sweeney's back on. So rather than the complexities of ITV4, can jump and watch some of those, and the Sweeney was a bit before my time, but it's just those little things, watching some of the old Minders as well, and you're watching it not for the story but just for those little hits, those little beats of memory that come through, and you go, oh my god, that.
I've never watched the Sweeney. I was always more of a professionals person. I feel like I should watch the Sweeney.
I do like both
of the actors. So yeah.
I mean, the Sweeney is a bit like that genre of show. We told you to say like the professionals, and even Minder to a degree, where it doesn't give to the audience. You've got to watch it. It won't spoon feed you.
Yeah.
And often the stories are quite clever, especially the Sweeney. Anyone listening, watching this, who hasn't, especially obviously if you enjoyed Life on Mars, you should be watching The Sweeney. I mean, The Sweeney was, you know, very much with a family member who was in the police force. I remember at the time it was very much sort of art imitating life, imitating art, where there was that cycle where there was a, you know, it was kind of, I think for some in the police, it kind of almost validated some of the sort of, certainly the masculinity and the approach to work, and perhaps even reinforced what the show was trying to depict. Yeah, it was a very influential show.
Yeah. There we go.
It's funny, I always remember the reveal on Sarah being at the end of episode one for some reason. I think because that's usually this place where you'd get that sort of reveal.
Yeah.
In my head.
Now, a few weeks ago, a tweet hit the internet from the Washington Times, where a company called Realbotix was revealing the first sex robots, which are about to hit the market. And they showed it without its head covering on. And to say it resembled the Android Invasion Sarah Jane, and the rest of them without their faces on, is something of an understatement. It's almost as if they took design cues from Sarah Jane's Android.
Bizarre.
Oh, yeah, it really was.
So, not particularly high-tech for...
It doesn't seem to be high-tech. It's just, like, full of plastic gears and things and wires.
Because the bizarre thing about that is, you know, any sort of, by how it's defined, sexual activity is a strong level of intimacy, which means obviously by intimacy you get very close to the other object, to the subject, and I can't think of one thing which you shouldn't have, which would need not to be as perfect and as real as possible as something in that sort of level, because the syntheticness would become more apparent the more real you try and make it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Different to sort of like sex toys, which are there for a function rather than to necessarily be believable. If you make a body, a robot, you're therefore, as we know, as Robots of Death would say, you know, you're there to try and make something believable. And you, so therefore you have to up your game so much so you can't Android Invasion it. Click, click. I might have to speed up a little bit because I think I'm running a little behind you.
Yeah.
Where are you up to, just out of interest? Credits?
No. Sarah has shot at the doctor.
Oh, so I'm way behind you now.
Yeah, yeah.
There we go. Just moving on. You can hear the clicks. The professionalness. There we go. We're probably about on sync.
Charles are talking.
Yeah. I think we've talked about this before. I think there's there's a slight difference in speed between the streams and the DVDs.
Yeah, what is that all about? We need someone technical to explain this to us, I think.
Yeah.
It is a strange thing. It can't be significant. Because no. You'd notice it, wouldn't you?
That's,
you know, like when you speed something
like,
up to watch it quickly on YouTube or something like that. It's not like that, but there must be, I don't know, losing 5 seconds a minute or something like that. I don't know.
I did something heinous the other day talking of DVDs. I don't know if I mentioned this to you, but it might make you wince.
What have you done?
The majority of my DVDs, because I say I don't watch DVDs anymore. Not really. There's so much content to watch, but I didn't want to throw them away. So I did a 50-50 thing. I got some.
You snapped them in half?
And I took all the CDs out and I threw out all the cases. I thought that would hurt you.
It's like taking the cover off a book, isn't it?
Yeah,
in some ways.
I know. Yeah, but I was like, I don't want to. I've not watched some of these in years, but there might be a time where I do. So you know, and I do a lot of moving around. So I thought, well, why not just get a massive 500 wallet thing and just dump them all in there, and like that makes it easy and it's less bulk. And I'd love to get away with. I mean, I know. You being a family man, you're in a position where it's a different situation for you, but I get tired of baggage, you know, of having too much stuff. It frustrates me. You know, don't you have those dreams where you're trying to pack and you can't find all the stuff you need to pack?
I've never had that dream, no.
Fine. Okay.
Sorry.
Some of us do. And yeah, so I to lessen the load. I mean, I think of how many VHS I threw. I mean, I know you've kept a lot of yours.
Oh, well, I wouldn't say I've kept a lot of them because we had a shed that collapsed in after successive rainstorms. It started getting mouldy and stuff. This was many years ago, going back to 2008, 2009. We had to demolish the shed, and we were using it for storage. There's a lot of stuff in there, and there was like VHS videos that were in an open top box. So most of my VHSs. Certainly over half of them had to go in the bin. I have kept a few of them, but we're talking probably a dozen at the most.
Yeah, and I threw all. And I think I had, like, all of Blake 7. So many, all the Doctor Who releases at the time. You know, so many VHS, and they've all gone. I mean, I've kept some box sets.
Yeah.
But the Doctor Who ones were not one of the box sets. They have all been truncated.
That's a good word.
I mean, it'd be really nice to... It'd be really nice to have a village dog too, which really explored a village more. You know, ones like this are very peripheral, and even the demons is a bit as well. One thing you also got to say about the Kral is that they look good on outside location.
They do.
In fact, they're probably one of the best costumes I've seen in the old show. I suppose, yeah. suppose it's a weird story which just feels so, it feels almost superfluous because it seems to add to nothing. It's everything it's doing, it's kind of done, the show's done before.
Yeah.
It doesn't do any of it badly. I suppose it's just largely unmemorable. It's really the village and the very bad robots that hold, you know, that make it memorable. It's actually quite, if I recall rightly, because that's a prop, isn't it? The crossroads thing.
Oh, is it?
Pretty sure it was. In fact, oh, right. Some of the close-up shots. I could be, I'm not sure I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure that they added that.
No. There's a photo of it on Wikipedia.
Well,
definitely
I stand
there.
Corrected.
Yeah, it's definitely there in the photograph taken for the Wikipedia page in 2013. It's a 15th century village cross with an 18th century sundial.
I have to say, the sonic screwdriver use there, you see it just getting them out of everything. Well, that one's fake anyway, so. It's such an odd story. It's funny, isn't it? Again, this sort of goes back to sort of the culture and the experience of watching television. But, you know, when watching this and when people watch this, we weren't around at the time, which I was not watching this because I was not a television watcher at the time.
Same here.
This would have, you know, you don't get the... You don't get the sensation of watching in context to all the other shows. And obviously you'll see on things like YouTube and on the DVD features, they try and give you that a little bit with the announcement at the beginning of the show, things like that to try and get you to feel what it was like. But you don't truly get the feeling of, you know, a few years later when I'd be watching television, which would be roughly the same sort of experience, where, you know, TV was fairly bland.
Mm.
And, you know, this to me would be, you know, this would be spectacle.
Yeah.
You know, wedged, you know, whether it be question of sport or panorama or, you know, everything was fairly functional. You know, there'd be a soap. You know, you'd start to work out. I certainly remember as a kid, I'd be, you know, you could plot the moments that you'd be watching television in a week because there was only certain elements of television you'd be able to watch because the rest of it would just not be for you.
Or there'd be no TV on.
Yeah.
Like, not as in nothing being broadcast.
Yeah.
Because you used to get gaps between programmes, didn't you? Just music or just a screen with music or you had the old test card and stuff like that. Or the coming up next sort of picture of shows that were coming up later on with a bit of music playing over the top, a bit of light jazz.
Yeah. I remember the excitement of Countdown for Channel 4, you know, this brand new channel. And this, you know, dodgy show which persists to this day, but...
With marginally better production values.
Yeah, I was, funnily enough, and going off Doctor Who again, I was talking to, I think it was one of my family members about this, and they were sort of saying, you know, in watching one of the most recent ones, how basic it looks. And I said, I think that's because... Part of the, because I mean, Countdown's based around randomization. That's its key core thing.
Mm.
And if it was letter rounds was as you would do it now and have a computer screen, you call the letters, the letter would generate up. I think there would be a feeling, a human feeling that could be cheat or is not truly random. I don't think people see the truth in randomness of electronics. I think having a stack of cards and putting the card on the wall has a sort of element of true randomness that people believe that pile is utterly, that analog pile is more random than it would be than if later on in the rounds where they do the compute, well, even when they do the numbers round, you've still got the board where you write the numbers down first before you auto-generate the number.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it is why it stayed like that, is because there is a certain part of its core values of the show, which is around analog and the randomness of analog compared to digital. But yeah, I mean, back to the point, at the time, that was like really exciting television because that was something brand new channel. So yeah, actually looking at what would be on in the day and what surrounds Doctor Who gives you an idea of the value of the show and the value of the episode. And yet at the same time, you will see so many, as you say, critics, especially at the time, not even just, you know, critics today, who would, as you say, like Kenneth Williams, who would say it just seems silly. But there's a bit of me which is like, silly compared to what? So in terms of sci-fi, certainly on television, there weren't any great hits really in terms of being, you know, perfect sci-fi.
Certainly not aimed at children. Or very rarely.
Oh,
I love that he's convinced that he's been rebuilt to in every detail. And no one mentions the eye patch.
I mean, he is what he's meant to be. He is a pathetic villain. A classic archetype of Doctor Who. Does feel like an episode, a story that could have been better as three.
Yes.
Because I kind of feel like you could pretty much end this on a third.
And again, that harks back to our question about what the actual original script was like and how much Robert Holmes added to it.
It's kind of interesting that Terry Nation scripts did seem to get hacked a lot.
Well, there's that famous line from Terrence, was it Terrence Dix? About Terry Nation sending a script in and it's the same one he'd written five times
yeah.
before.
Yeah. When you think, you know, he's quite a decent name at this point, and yet his scripts get the same hack scrutiny as they would anyone else's.
Yeah.
Get pulled apart.
You wouldn't trust the real Harry with that, would you?
Such a shame. They just, you know, to say he was such a smart, was so good. And we end up overwatching this.
Say again?
Are we overwatching this?
Overwatching it? Well, yes, we could be. I don't remember much of this episode for some reason. I think the thing about this story is it's a lot of it hinges on the final episode, doesn't it? Not necessarily in terms of the plot, but in this case, the scenes and Milton John's realization as Crayford. it's Nelson in Blackadder, isn't it? When he wakes up with the eye patch on the wrong eye. He goes, oh my God, I've gone blind! And then Blackadder leans over and moves the eye patch across. And I think the set in the last episode's good as well. Which we will see in a bit. So perhaps there is a little bit of overwatching this, but it is because I don't remember episode 3 particularly, to be honest with you. I think also, as we've mentioned as well, there's a lot of good location work in this episode, and the studio stuff's a bit drab, isn't it? I think it works better on all the location stuff works a lot better than the studio stuff.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely. Even though they've obviously made some effort with the studio stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not saying it's bad. I just it feels livelier when they're out in the village or even out in the countryside in the thickets.
Yeah. And yet at the same time, should enjoy the shift in location. One of the nice things about this episode is it doesn't just go from point A to point B, it does have a break.
Yeah.
Again, the set is very Zygon-y, isn't it?
It is. I was thinking that earlier on when we saw it, yeah.
And yet it's not reused, it's just Zygon-y.
I think it's to do with the angles of the control consoles and the arrangement of the actual controls. It's nothing like the same sort of feel. It resembles it in a its own sort of way.
I think there's a sort of odd juxtaposition between the organicness of the Crow technology and their androids, which, while organic on the outside, are very motorised.
That's quite a good bit of effects work. I like that. Don't bang your head, Sarah. I was looking at the target.
Stuart fell, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Crowl. I was looking at the target novelization and comparing the face of the Crowl with what I've seen on TV and also the mask of Stigron at the National Space Centre. And neither of them... The one on TV appears brownish. The one at the National Space Centre is more browny grey. And the target novelisation by Roy Knipe, the green. bright green face and hands, which, I mean, I guess are aliens and green goes with aliens and that, but, and I suppose a lot of the cover is kind of brownish, which may be why they've decided to go for a green colour with it, but it is strange how it's takes a bit of an artistic liberty with that.
Perhaps also why they've never really an indicator that they don't really stuck in the cultural memory, that they just don't have any set in. Centaurans are always pretty uniform, aren't they?
Yeah, even when they're different.
Yeah,
well, we've all been in some nightclubs like that. Flashing lights and electronic music and feeling unwell.
Electronic music, eh?
No, not really.
Sounds someone far back in time.
Oh, we're using photo caption backgrounds here, aren't we? Which they haven't really used a lot since the Barry Letts era.
That's a good point. Might be a reason for that.
Well, they don't look great, do they? I suppose they don't look great on modern TVs. They're and displays. They're okay for your old 625 line systems, I think. You don't really notice the lack in picture quality so much with them.
True. Yeah.
So that's the end of episode 3 of Doctor Who and the Android Invasion, which means we've got one episode of this written by Terry Nation story to go.
And we have commenced.
Yeah, you can't skip the titles. I don't care what anyone says. And it's Doctor Who anyway. And you got Tom Baker staring at you. And you got that, I mean, that amazing opening title sequence anyway is just, I'm not saying you see something new every time you look at it, but it is a marvel of technological feats, I think.
Yeah, like we've said in previous parts, I enjoy title sequences. They set it up, and I mean, you remember going back to the old VHS days when they were all edited together.
Oh.
And I remember as a kid having to try and work out where the endpoint would be.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was just desperate to have them to have titles, and I can't remember the first one I had which did have titles, but I was so pleased to have them.
That's a good point. I don't know what my first one was with title. Oh, no, the first one I got was The Keeper of Traken on VHS, which did have titles, but not long after that, I was going to say gig, like it was like some cool thing. It wasn't a gig. I was assisting someone laying patios, and I got paid a handsome amount of money, so I decided to spend some of it on some VHS videos. This is when WH Smith had its $7.99 offer on a load of Doctor Who's.
Mm.
And one of them was the Time Warrior, which didn't have episode endings. And I remember watching it baffled that it didn't have episode endings.
Yeah, there was quite a few before they went into having episode endings. So I remember I had the original range, you know, so Seeds of Death, Revenge of the Cybermen, The Five Doctors,
robots of death. Time Warrior didn't have endings. Didn't have was a full edited together, was it?
Yeah.
I think Seeds of Death was edited together as well. I had that. Not Seeds of Death, sorry, Spared from Space.
Spared,
easy right. to get those two words mixed up. Yeah, I'm trying to think when the first ones would have been that I'd have seen that did have titles when they shifted. Weird, isn't it? Wonder if it was Mask of Mandragora or Tomb of the Cybermen. Something around then. I think something around that period, maybe.
But yeah, for a long time. Mask of Mandragora is one that was edited together.
Oh, was it?
I think so.
You might be right.
I think a lot of the photo caption covers were edited together, but not all of them, because Ark in Space isn't edited together.
Ark in Space was one whole one.
Was it?
But it wasn't later. Initially, one of the original video library ones, wasn't it?
Ah, right.
Ark in Space.
Yeah. I didn't mean photo caption covers. I meant like photo composite covers. So.
I saw something to look up, isn't it? I'm kind of interested now. I don't know why. It's a pathetic thing to be interested in. But it meant a lot to me as a kid. And when they shifted, it was jubilant. Tales of Wing Chiang, again, another one that was all edited all the way through as one whole.
I like this space centre setup that they've got. It's a lot more efficient than the one in Ambassador. Yes, and it's more efficient than the one from Ambassadors of Death as well.
Yes, yeah. As a kid, I was obsessed with phones, and especially Trim phones.
My dad used to do an impersonation of a Trim phone, which baffled the hell out of me and really annoyed my mum. So she was delighted when we got the other type of phone.
I mean, they had a very distinctive noise.
Yeah, they had a distinctive noise. My dad could impersonate it, and it used to irritate the hell out of my mum because she thought the phone was ringing. And also, we were one of those houses that had a phone, whereas some of our neighbours didn't. So if the phone was ringing, it was like doubly concerning because it might not be for you, it might be for a neighbour.
Mm. Yeah, it's a weird episode, this, to suddenly have, you have Benton and Marta and Levine and Marta, and it is...
And essentially a fake brigadier.
Yeah.
Essentially, because he's just, there's no Nick Courtney, so they just create a replica of the brigadier. It's ironic, isn't it, that it's this episode, the android invasion, where there's all these android duplicates walking around, these facsimiles, and they bring in a facsimile brigadier.
Yeah, too true. Beautifully put. I like it. Yeah, it's I think one of the things that does make it very odd is that because it's set on Earth, but it's not set on Earth. It really is a story where there's only two humans up until with one exception, until the last episode. Which in theory should make it charming, but somehow it doesn't quite work for me. And yet there's nothing, as we've been saying throughout this, there's nothing inherently wrong with it. That's the sad thing. It's kind of an episode which it doesn't do anything particularly wrong. And it looks good all the way through, by and large. Yes, you have some repeated NASA footage and a couple of dodgy robots, but
although we do,
like you said,
we do overlook the fact that there's a naval medical officer observing some meteorites coming crashing down. Why is he there?
Yeah, I know. Again, as I say, I think probably one of the reasons I dislike this episode, but I'm not drawn to it, is that it disappoints me. You know, you've got Harry Sullivan there, you've got Benton, and it does nothing with them. And that's kind of, especially Harry, who I think was a great character. And they've retrospectively acknowledged that was kind of a mistake. in assuming they didn't need him because, as we know, Baker was cast as a younger actor than they were anticipating, so he was redundant. And I don't think that's the case at all. I think he worked very well with Doctor and Sarah. I far prefer, to be honest. I mean, while I have to say there is a dynamic in chemistry between Baker and Sladen, I do prefer the ones with Marta in there as well. I think he really does make a good, they make a good trio.
I don't think I prefer either combination. I think they both work as well as each
Yeah,
other.
that's fair. That's fair.
Ah, right.
Suppose
That's
I'm.
why he's there to examine Guy Crayford. That's why. That makes sense, I suppose, somewhat. So, while we were chatting earlier, there was a scene of the doctor's duplicate,
Yeah.
which I'd forgotten about. Another aspect of this I'd forgotten about, the doctor fighting himself, fighting his stunt coordinator.
Yeah.
Well, at least we know the TARDIS is safe.
Well, barely. Rackety old prop.
Is.
Almost it's penultimate story, this, isn't it?
Is it that late, is it?
Seeds of Doom is where it collapses, isn't it? I'm not sure it gets another outing after this, does
I
it?
think you're probably right, yeah.
The Brain of Morbius, Planet of Evil. I must be, it's terrible. My memory, my chronology of these episodes is not very good in this era.
Well, it doesn't matter, does it? Because
It's just a personal thing.
their chronology of these episodes isn't very good.
That's very true. I mean, I have a terrible memory, and only in the last year or so have I found out that I do legitimately medically have a terrible memory, which is a comfort and not. It makes me wonder how I've remembered so much of these shows that I do, but yeah. Yeah, I know I'm still thinking about the Harry, the trio compared to the duo, which, as you say, you shouldn't be done because they're two different things. You can enjoy both. I think to me, I've always, and we've had talks about this in the past, I've always do enjoyed Doctor Who more when it sort of kind of breaks what is invariably that sort of Doctor Who mould, which has eventually become post-Pertwee or Pertwee onwards, the Doctor and Companion setup, which I've always found a bit dull. And so I think that's probably why I sort of have a, f while I can enjoy Sladen and Baker, ultimately they can only work in a, they can only function a certain way because the character, the writers never develop their companion. So when you get another third one in there, someone like Harry, it just kind of adds a little extra colour in there, which is otherwise missing. Mean, some people have argued, and quite reasonably so, Doctor Who's not about fleshing out the leads, it's about fleshing out the world that they'll land in. Not horrendously sure I believe in that either, but it's a nice take. I just don't think it's quite the honest hot take that people think it is. Because Doctor Who doesn't really flesh anyone out.
No, not really, no.
You know, I remember being at school and liking to wear my tie nice and loose. Just watching these shots. Just always hated ties. Still hate ties. It's it's funny that when Baker's wearing the outfit, just a shot of him with the mic up close, how much that is a costume like any superhero. He just, or once he's in it.
Mm.
He just makes it work in a way that very few people could. I'd love to see the history of violence on television, so far as when did it become a thing that the shoulder club would be something which would always knock people out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The thump on the back of the shoulders being
the prayer knocking someone out.
If you're behind someone and you attack them at any part of their body, they will fall unconscious. The best one is in Blake 7 in the fourth series in Games, where Tarrant attacks a security guard with the butt of his gun and knocks him out. The guy's wearing a full-on helmet. That's it. Butt of a plastic gun on the top of a hard industrial helmet, and the guy topples and you're saying, yay. But he comes from behind, you see. So that's the weakness. If you come from behind, you can knock people out wherever you hit them, largely.
Why on earth is Patrick Newell the stand-in Colonel Faraday for the Brigadier, the stand-in boss of Europe, of UNIT? Why is he so against the idea that there could be an alien invasion taking place?
Yeah, it's a bit curious, isn't it? There are some good moments in this. The ridiculous dive through the window is an excellent one. I think the funny thing about the android invasion is I could imagine it being a setup for a new adventures, almost. It would be a little more deeply written, but I don't know. There's just something about it that it's just a little haphazard for television. It's in some ways a little ambitious and also somehow not rigorous in its use of genre, that it sort of slips between sci-fi, mystery, in a way that a book can do far more seamlessly without it feeling odd, that a television show can't do without it feeling a bit weird. You think how this, you know, the story started in episode one, where, you know, it's this sort of quiet, slowly plodding sort of English mystery. And you get to this point by episode four, where we're straight into the usual invasion Earth stuff.
I suppose if he was going to confuse any of the androids, it would be the Benton android, wouldn't it?
Well, I was kind of also thinking it's a shame for Benton, isn't it? I mean, again, for audiences, you think, oh, Benton's finally here. And again, we're spending half the time with Benton, you know, with robot Benton again. Yes, as skilled as his counterpart. Sarah's got an obsession for rockets, isn't she? Again, another callback. This is almost like the greatest hits of the early Baker years.
Oh, climbing rockets.
Yeah, you've got the climbing rockets. You've got there's a sort of slight feel of UNIT on Earth, the robot. You've got, as we've said before, Tower of the Zygons playing in this. A little bit of feeling of Pyramid of Mars in the first episode, maybe. A little bit of Genesis of the Daleks in there. Harry Sullivan makes an appearance. Yeah, it's just missing the Brigadier for the bingo card. It's even got an eye patch. It's got the eye patch, but ain't got the Brigadier. It doesn't feel a confident story. I think that's probably one of the problems. It's got lots of different ideas in there. Some of them are quite clever, like the reveal here. You've got the whole duplicate things, which kind of runs throughout, which is probably its central theme, the androids. But at the same time, the androids aren't really the threat.
Oh,
It's.
definitely.
Yep.
That would have worked so much better with film.
Yes. Barely any point for Marta being in this.
I mean, are we just going to politely skate over the fact that Crayford never checked that he had two eyes, or I mean, my dad has one eye, so there's a lot of work goes into having just one eye. There's a lot of cleaning required and things, so
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I suppose a deeper story would perhaps argue that perhaps he knew all along and didn't want to admit it somehow. Or
yeah.
I know what you mean. It's played for the moment, but it doesn't really hold up when you think about it. Like so much television. And film. I mean, I was having a debate with colleagues again, the classic one over having watched Obi-Wan and giving no spoilers away. But Skywalker, you know, it's just, it's, you know, there's hiding in plain sight and there's hiding in plain sight. And you've put your hidden son with the uncle of the person who'd be hunting him with his original name. Vader never finds him. And you just got to gloss over these things to some degree. But we can't. We need to find reasons to.
Well, they lined the eyes up nicely there.
I was just thinking that. That's just a really good, that's a really good cross, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very rare. It's a pity that it crossed into something again, just not very good. But then, as you say, with certain robots coming out, maybe it was actually better than we realised.
Yes. So that's the Android Invasion. Now, I'll be honest, I haven't watched this for a few years, so
Same here. You know, I know we could go on this, but I think what I quite like about Sarah is that she travels in a way which is a bit like one of the New Age companions. That she goes along, but there's always a slight hesitancy when she gets back to Earth about whether to carry on going, and I kind of like that.
Well, they've, I mean, it's certainly an aspect of her, that they've carried on, isn't it? They've obviously drawn from that, I think.
Yeah, and it's a nice touch.
So, yeah, that was the Android Invasion. So give us your thoughts on the episode, whether you've watched it along with us or...
God, I hope you've because otherwise
yeah, I, hope you have
I don't think this conversation will have made much sense.
Or you have recollections of this four-part story from Doctor Who Series 13 or Season 13. We will be back for another podcast soon. Until then, it's goodbye from us.